Hi, this is Zoe Durand, and I'm a family lawyer and mediator, and you're listening to the Inside Family Law podcast. This podcast is presented by Mediation Answers in partnership with Artwork and Lawyer Magic. Over the course of these episodes, I will take you on a 360-degree deep dive into all aspects of the family law process by talking with some of the greatest minds in family. I'm hoping that through this podcast, we can really encourage interdisciplinary conversations and perspectives that allow us to go deeper into what is really going on in the family law process, and that also make us more curious in our approaches to family law and how we do what we do every day.
Hi, this is Zoe Durand, and I am running the interviews here at the Pacifica Congress Conference. We're here live in Hobart for the 2023 conference, and I've got the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Simon Kennedy, but I'd like you to introduce sort of what you do and your context here in speaking.
Sure, not a problem. I'm a clinical and forensic psychologist in Melbourne, based in Camberwell, Director of Psychology Camberwell. We're a group that undertakes psycholegal assessment, primarily in the family and children's law space, but family law primarily. So we do family reports, individual psychosexual reports, parenting plans, child assessments, and a variety of other psycholegal assessments. About 1,000 cases per year, and I've been doing these sort of reports for the last 30-odd years out of 40.
Okay, so you got a lot of experience, obviously.
Sure.
And what's the thrust of what you're talking about here at the conference?
The main issue is that in writing family reports for family law matters, we're appointed as a single expert witness to the court. The court's wanting to have recommendations from us directly that impact children's lives. Quite often what it appears that when people produce are general comments or observations about families, but ultimately what a court or a judge has to get to is putting together recommendations that will go into orders and then therefore make a difference to the time arrangements for kids dealing with separated parents, or care arrangements. And your job in a family report is to assess the whole family, identify what the major issues are in terms of time and care or other custody components, and then put forward long-term and or short-term plans that make a difference for those kids. So the difficulty in family reports is not so much identifying what the problems are. That's part and parcel of clinical assessment, observation and so on, and as long as people are undertaking a reasonable methodology in doing that, then a lot of family report writers are able to come to conclusions where they say, this is what I've found. The more difficult part really is going from conclusions, that is taking your data, making a conclusion, and then creating inferences which then move you on to making recommendations. Making recommendations is a kind of a quantum leap in terms of the whole process. So up to now, there's been very little done in terms of a standardised methodology of identifying what are the major risk factors or needs and strengths that are identified in family law evaluations, parenting evaluations, what are called family reports in Australia. So what we've done and what I've been working on in Psychology Camberwell over the last couple of years is to identify what those major factors are. And they've included a whole variety of things, but in this talk I've identified 22 major factors from the literature and also from clinical practice that we believe are central to those recommendations. So the process is very much about assessing and identifying in a structured way, in what we term structured professional judgment manner, what those factors are, and with this family, how they interact, what's happening in those factors, and what are central issues. So it may be, for example, age, attachment and relationship. It may be family dysfunction, communication between the parents. There are a series of factors that we've identified. As I said, leaping out from empirical literature, shared wisdom that's in the field, and also obviously our experience, but following on very much from the literature. And so what it presented really was kind of like a matrix of what the factors are, with a focus then that each family report would be driven by or directed by these well-established structured factors. Mm-hmm. And then what you do really is weight those factors, identifying that some things like, for example, alienation or a disability in a child or a practical factor like the parents living 100 kilometres apart, they might be the things that really make a significant difference to your recommendations ultimately. So the weighting component is really important. So just to go back, really what we're doing is identify the factors, assess with each family across the 22 factors where they sit, and therefore create a formulation and do that by weighting the factors along the way and using this then to say, okay, here are the recommendations that are going to be right for this family, mm-hmm. with the presumption that each family it's going to be slightly different. Some families, you know, they're going to be more practical factors. Sometimes it's about parental care. Occasionally it's about a child's individual disposition, mm-hmm. or similar. I think what's different about this, and I hope what's a contribution, is it's to move away from what I call formula recommendations, where people just have a formula to say, well, every time a family comes in and the child's under the age of four, that routinely what we say is two nights or three nights with the non-residential parent per fortnight. To me, that's a formula, and it's not assessing the family, it's not analysing the important components, and therefore, ultimately, you're not going to be helping the children's needs, assessing the parents and the parents' needs, and coming to a better solution.
So, is what you're talking about, I guess, more nuanced in terms of looking at all these different factors rather than just this age, this, that age? Is that what you mean?
That's right. It's putting it together in what we call structured professional judgment. You're taking those factors, those factors guide you in your assessment, and they also guide your decision-making. Where I think it's important is that it's, in my view, it's usable for clinicians in doing family reports, but it's also usable for lawyers to be able to guide their clients in being realistic in the kind of needs that are required for their kids, and similarly guiding the courts. If I can be bold about that they can obviously use the same sort of ideas to say, well, in this case, let's weigh up these factors. What are the most important? I think it's a process that's not novel. The structured professional judgment approaches have been around in forensic psychology from its inception, and certainly within the courts, decision-making processes are much the same. All we're doing really is formalising it. The other thing that I've kind of emphasised is that the factors that I've identified really are not the only ones possible. It's really just saying that you might find in a particular case that there is some other factor like parents' health or a cultural factor or some other factor that's not included in our little list that people can then include, and those factors then will go to weight more heavily. So that'll influence the kind of recommendations that you make.
And now, just a couple of words about Lawyer Magic, a one-day course on the secret sauce to law practice scale-up. We demystify all the parts around being a lawyer that you actually need to know to thrive in law, but usually no one teaches you. The three pillars to Lawyer Magic are the law of attraction, being magnetic, branding, marketing, and positioning yourself as an expert, the honeymoon phase, drawing clients to you, networking, building referral chains, keeping the spark alive, keeping clients happy along the whole journey and getting paid seamlessly, but in a way that clients understand the value of your work. Nicole Evans said, Zoe and Roey were fantastic. They tailored this course around our firm and our needs. We all took away a lot of practical tips and new ideas to implement on a day-to-day basis. We believe the real magic happens by identifying what is naturally unique about you, including your special passions, and showing how to amplify and communicate this. Exhibit A, hopefully like I'm doing in this podcast.
I mean, it's interesting what you say. I mean, I guess, you know, obviously I'm not in the psychology area, I'm more from the family lawyer kind of mediator perspective, but sometimes you do see that approach where it's sort of, I don't say family more by numbers, but come on, the kids this age, it's going to be this. It's like in stratums, like kids at this age, it's got to be this amount of time. But then you do also see how that more nuanced, like some practitioners will say, yes, the kids are that age, but look at this particular child subjectively has these issues, whatever it is, and this parent has these other whatever it is, and then maybe this other time arrangement's appropriate. Like, it's, there's different ways we as lawyers who are not psychologists and whatever talk about it, I guess.
That's exactly right. I think the more nuanced approaches really use a matrix where you're taking into account a whole series of factors, and that can include, for example, where the families live, the kind of suburb that they live in,
work hours of a parent,
all of those practical factors have to be taken into account.
Not just, well, it's this age, it's got to be this.
No. One of the major controversies really has been around age, and in the evaluation I address that pretty clearly. There's very good evidence from a particularly good study by Richard Warshak, which really outlines that young children can and should spend time with both parents overnight from a relatively early age. Of course, taking into account that there's established relationships and there's safety and there are no major risk factors. But one of the major controversies has been around age, and I think too much people have just simply said, oh, here's this one factor that guides us in what we've got to say. And in fact, realistically, you need to take into account all these other factors. And there's no point in saying, you know, the parents could do two nights on and two nights off if the children have to drive 150 kilometres and by the time they get to one parent's place, they're going to be exhausted. And it just won't work. And you know that the children then are going to be distressed and hopeless.
Look, you mentioned this is a bit left of what you're talking about, but you've obviously been doing this for a long time. Was it 40 years?
40 years total, but 30 years in psycholegal kind of areas. And
What have you seen, I mean, sorry to put you on the spot, but it's something I'm just personally curious about, changes in things over the years, the way things are done? Because, you know, not everyone has that ability to describe something 30 years ago, so I'm curious how things have changed in the way we approach these sort of psychological reports.
The primary change has been the involvement in fathers. When I began doing family reports, the standard substantial time was three nights and 11 nights, so three nights with the father, Friday night possibly through to Sunday, and then possibly another night in the intermediary week. Whereas now most courts would be looking at, if there are no major risk factors and you're going for a home-based approach, which for some young children is entirely appropriate, 5-9 time is considered sort of a standard starting point. The other thing is that I think when I began doing family reports, you know, 25 years ago or so, half-time arrangements weren't really even considered unless it was a very unusual situation. Whereas I think in many situations, and certainly post-COVID, where people have greater flexibility with their work, people have looked at this as a possibility, and certainly that fits much more with the literature. That the literature says very clearly that involvement in both parents in overnight time, even with young children under the age of four, is a significant factor in progressing their mental health, for obvious reasons that you just look at it really from a practical perspective. When you have two parents together, they're sharing the time, a lot of the time, that there's a tag team effort. Whereas if you've got to care for a child for 14 days out of 14, that's exhausting for most parents. So we know that quality of care goes up when parents, when children are cared for by both parents. That's a positive for kids. Kids tell you that all the time, that at mum's place it's great, at dad's it's great. Dad and mum get a break in between. They get their own lives to some degree. So we know that shared care in a variety of different forms, whether it's equally shared care or other forms of shared care, is helpful for most families in most situations. So that's been a significant change. Mm. The other thing is, more generally, I think there has been the recognition that that both parents bring more to the table. So certainly for women to return to work soon after separations is something that's happening much more regularly in matters that we see, in part because they need to, and that's not great, but the other side of it is certainly they're saying, well, look, you know, I need my own life as well. And those things, I think, are important changes. So, but COVID has changed the work situation significantly. So it's not unusual that parents will be saying, I work 3 days and 2 days, so 2 days I can be at home and the kids, you know, I can pick up the kids early from school and those kind of things, which are really great for children's care, of course.
And so that's looking back sort of in the past and things and that. Thank you for that, in terms of the way things are shifting over time. What do you think is on the horizon? Any shifts in, you know, because these things do change, you know, even with science, you know, things change. And so is the way, do you see any new trends coming in, or trends, new approaches coming in, or ways that things can be done?
I think I would hope that there's more hope than actually seeing it. What would you
hope will change?
I would hope that children would get off their tablets, because it's a major problem. COVID has made a huge problem with children
being everyone working from home, kids at home,
and kids being on tablets all day and watching stupid games. And I have no problem with some games, but the reality is we have kids with significant addictions, and also then parents not providing appropriate boundaries. There's a complete imbalance with a lot of children's care in terms of their outside versus inside activity, that significant numbers of kids are spending far too much time inside. They're not doing enough exercise. Then people are surprised when they see, you know, that kids have got mental health problems, anxiety. We know that anxiety is directly improved by people having significant physical health on a day-to-day basis. Children need that kind of outside activity and they need more socialisation. So I think the homeschooling thing has got absolute problems, that it ties parents and it reduces standard socialisation for children. I think some of the really basic things about children's care need to be re-established, including socialisation, regularly going to school, spending time outside, doing physical exercise of any sort, or, you know, things like music, art, all the normal kind of creative activities. There's been far too much focus on people being safe, being at home. And while we understand that with COVID, it's really problematic, because then what happens is that it alters this whole thing about what should happen between parents, and ultimately it has a significant effect on the kids' mental health. So I'd like that to change, and I hope it does change, but we'll see how that goes. Yeah.
No, I appreciate it. This is the opportunity to voice things candidly. That's sort of why I do these podcast interviews.
And now a few words about artwork, where we bring art to your place of work. As some of you might know, away from the law, I have pursued a passion for art, exhibiting in London, Sydney, Melbourne, throughout China, and at a contemporary show in the Louvre in Paris. I'm now sharing my love of art and creativity with workplaces. I'd love to hear from you if you would be interested in team bonding art lessons, curated pieces for your office, or making your next corporate event a showstopper with a piece of art created live for your guests. I'm also interested in any of the other ideas you might have about how to inject creativity into your place of work and shake things up, hopefully in a good way. The benefit of working with me is that uniquely I am both an artist and a lawyer, so I have an understanding of the law firm corporate events context and can chew the fat with your guests about law, life, art, and my creative process whilst I create your special piece for your firm. Bronwyn O'Lone said, "This was truly an amazing experience. We keep getting comments from those that joined us on our special evening about how inspiring it was to watch you create such beautiful art. The memories will live on in the artwork, which will be hung proudly in our meeting space."
I mean, anything else? What about, I mean, one thing I'm interested in is, there's this interesting, I guess, there's an interface, because it's in family law, it brings in so many other interdisciplinary kind of areas.
Yeah.
Is there anything you would like to see family lawyers do differently? Or should I even say that?
Oh, yeah. Always, of course. Yeah, look, I think there's, even though I'm probably shooting ourselves in the foot because we do a lot of assessments in this area, I think there's too much focus on individual family reports. Or I think there needs to be a way for family reports to be reviewed if they seem to be problematic. There needs to be panels where people can look at those so that there's greater consistency in terms of the quality. As well as that, I think what is absolutely lacking is enough treatment within family law. We have groups of people who we say, you know, these are great practitioners who the family should go and see after we do the assessment. We provide some of the treatment, but we just can't provide anywhere near enough. You know, we're producing something like, you know, 10 to 15 to 20 reports every week in the family law space. And routinely, they have recommendations about treatment. There's just not enough treatment around. The other thing that's very important, and it's much more controversial, is that there needs to be protection for family law practitioners, as in psychologists, social workers, psychiatrists, from the family law sector in terms of retribution against family law practitioners like psychologists. The reality is that it's an emotional area. We understand completely why people are upset when they get a report that's not in their favour. But equally, the difficulty is that a significant number of people won't go into the law, won't go into family report writing because they perceive it's too dangerous in a variety of different ways. So
there aren't enough report writers. There's not enough. Problem,
yeah, and we're recruiting all the time, and we have got a great team, but we always need more. We can never supply the demand, and then really family law needs to take it on. And as in, for example, in Western Australia, there are very clear protections for individuals going through a family law process with respect to reports to the board and so on. So I think people need to recognise that the field as a whole need to protect those who are involved in it.
Anything else? Any sort of, I guess sort of more tips for family lawyers in terms of, you know, working with or engaging a family report writer, or like if they do, as you say, have an issue where they disagree with what's in a report, or just anything, any tips in general for family lawyers?
I think it's very important that they don't just follow the trend of, you know, they talk to a friend of theirs and say, "Oh, I got a report from so-and-so the other day," and so on. And it's great. I think they need to be cautious about that stuff. I think that people need to think about the quality of what they're getting rather than looking for just an opinion from someone, because that will ultimately backfire on them. I think, unfortunately, we see that at certain points, and I do reviews of family reports, you know, we see that it's very clear that certain people are making referrals strategically rather than in terms of experience or some other factor that would normally go ahead, which would make you say, okay, this family will work with this person because that person's got a lot of experience or whatever. But too often I think it's that well, this person is going to, you know, favour the mother, and so we're going to refer them to her, mm-hmm. to her. And I think mm-hmm. that's from my perspective, that's that strategic approach doesn't make a lot of sense, and I don't think it makes sense with the court. And ultimately, I think it backfires on the family. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, look, thank you very much for chatting with me. I really appreciate your insights, and thanks very much.
Absolute pleasure.
If you want to reach either myself or Dr. Kennedy, or find out about the Pacifica Congress conference, there'll be some links below. Thanks very much. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inside Family Law. I hope you got a lot out of it, and that it has sparked a lot of questions and conversations that you'll keep having with your colleagues in the area. If you do want to stay connected with me, then please reach out on LinkedIn. You can find me, I'm Zoe Duran, or you can reach me on Instagram at Mediation Answers. My website is www.mediationanswers.com.au. If you have any fabulous ideas for a podcast interview, then please be in touch with me. Also, if you would like me to cover your family law conference, for example, or any other conference or event, I'm more than happy to discuss if this would work. So please also do reach out. Thanks very much, and I hope you listen in next time.